a situation where I was like the kid in art class that was good, and I almost went to art school. That's what I wanted to do. And then my art teacher was like, it takes you entirely too long. Like, I don't want to stop you from pursuing your dream, but like, heads up, if you go to art school with the amount of time it takes you, it's going to like, it's going to be a nightmare, you know? And so then I ended up going to school for audio instead, and now I'm still doing that. So, yeah.
I just dropped out of school altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also ended up ultimately did that too.
Yeah.
I've dropped out three times.
Yeah. It allowed me to pace my education organically to how my mind interprets it.
Yeah.
Or accepts things.
Right. Yeah.
So the learning for me is easy because I can do it absolutely at my pace.
Yeah. Absolutely,
I'm
yeah.
teaching myself guitar right now around the same idea.
Nice. Yeah.
He's also a musician.
I'm a self-taught guitarist as well. Yeah.
So I'm just getting the finger dexterity and placement. I'm in that stage of it.
Yeah.
Nice. That's
the hardest part. Once you get that, it's all
fun.
And
I'm real new with it. So a lot of mixed notes, a lot of bad notes. It's
accidental pinch harmonics.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, man, this sounds like a metal album.
It's not fully attuned to the... to good tuning yet, but close.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm hoping we can do, see, I sing, so I'm hoping we can have to do a duet one of these days.
Oh, wow.
I want to see that.
This is why I've been trying to get out.
See?
It's full circle. Like what we talked about, it's just your friends just sucker you into stuff and you hate them. But like I've known you for so long that I can't actually hate you. I just gotta hate you internally.
I got anecdotes about that. Oh man, we've had some experience. Me and Brother Roosevelt have had some really good traveling experiences. Yeah. They're just tongue in cheek friendship stuff. The stuff that you'll be teasing each other about, man.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Five. Yeah. It's like, man, you remember that day I was in your really bad junky car? And I was single, and your car helped me to stay single longer.
Oh my God, it is my life with Chris. Holy hell. Man. This is for real. Yeah. Like,
man.
The car was called the Brown Bomber.
The Brown Bomber.
And it bombed.
Oh, man. I just took the ER off of it after a while.
Just drive around. Is that thing just going to explode?
Oh, it would be Machindo and my five kids together
in the
car.
Yo, dude, that's gotta help us all the city. That's gotta be
Wait,
like, oh
look
man.
Look at the car itself, and then I'm leaning out of the passenger side. And talking about, hey, how you doing?
No, I'm in this car with another man and five kids.
Five children.
So,
that's the other side of it.
Make your own assumptions.
Right, well, exactly.
Roosevelt, you want to deal with that?
Yeah.
You can deal with that.
I leave it to you.
You know exactly where that's going.
There were times when we would go to Walmart shopping.
Well, give him the top side. The top side of it was, and I'll let him finish. The top side was, I moved to North Carolina and didn't have a car for almost a year.
Okay.
And Roosevelt was a kind of irreplaceable friend where he saw to it that my errands for food and other things were taken care of. I mean, really.
See, that's
really
love.
Yeah, that's real love.
See, that's who you want to get married to.
And so from there, I'll let Roosevelt take the rest of the story.
I'm not gay, but I would marry you for that. Absolutely. Like, I'll take the tax breaks and the free car rides.
Right.
And I will fight the injustice that is America.
Man, the injustice. Oh, man. That's an statement. We will be shopping in Walmart. Now, we will be going our separate ways. We come back together simply because people would stop us and say, you guys look so great together.
Oh, my God. You guys are so cute together.
What was so interesting about the time and the shift in people's paradigm, the way they were thinking, there was nothing for us to say, yo, this is my partner.
Yeah.
Right, because we were actually partnering, and we were doing a lot of traveling together for the trials and ship.
And then we had to tack on business partner.
Yeah. The word partner becomes so ambiguous.
Exactly.
Because, like, so you guys, like, own a law firm together.
One
like
you're
seeking adoption.
She said, are you guys a couple? And I said, no. And she says, like you tell me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so fucking sassy.
Oh, man, are you kidding? Wow. But what it challenged, now this is the esoteric side of that, is that we like to stress men out about their homophobia, right?
Sounds like us.
But we don't allow them to be close friends without tacking homophobia on the friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's
a weird duality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The number of times that I have basically, like, when my girlfriend comes home and she'll make fun of me and stuff about, like, she's like, so what, are you out with other girls? I'm like, no, if you're not here, I'm just fucking Chris. Like, that's just what I do.
Yikes.
Or no, yeah, like, it's funny because, like, our producer and myself and her boyfriend, we all work at the same place, it's a very southern, very
close.
It's a very, you know, like, conservative environment.
Oh,
and so, like, it's
belt.
Oh my God, yeah. It's so I constantly get to sit there and make people uncomfortable saying, like, all my things that make me sound
that
gay.
Make you sound real.
And like,
that's hilarious.
Oh, it's so fun because, like, we ended up actually having a conversation about how I get made fun of more than anybody else in the factory for being gay when everyone knows I've got a girlfriend.
Of course.
Right. And I'm like, yeah, man, I like butts. Mainly male butts.
And I cannot, like, lie.
If it's a girl butt, that's fine, but I prefer boy butts. I don't know. And on that note, welcome to Name Redacted Podcast.
I was going to say, we're starting to feel like...
What a start.
Yeah.
It's starting to feel like Stranger Things. Really.
No, yeah.
Halfway through the episode. Where's the intro?
I love TV shows that don't give you the title card until 30 minutes in.
More than halfway. Yeah,
yeah. And then I think the show is ending, and I'm like, it was only 30. Oh, no, it's beginning. In the middle. Okay. As always. Spiking like crazy. Yeah, that's all right. Do you know where the main is? There it is.
No,
is that it?
No. It's those two faders.
Those two faders. There. Yeah. Yeah. Just down a little bit. Maybe right there.
Cool.
I think we're there.
So on that note, I am Chris Nielsen.
I'm Alexander Fulmer.
Colin is out this week, but we have our lovely producer Olivia with us.
Hi.
And our two guests this week are actually two guys that are producing an old new comic, as it were. Like, I don't really know how to intro it, but Roosevelt Pitts, and he's the writer. And forgive me if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly. Wait for it. I gotta see it spelled again.
Mshindo.
Mashindo. Yes. Mashindo Kumba. Yes. I knew the last name. Because I only read it twice, and I was like, there's a vowel missing in here.
Well, there's a country guy that I guess. He misunderstood me because it was an interesting name. And he says, is your name Nintendo?
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
So I said, if you remember that, you remember my name.
Yeah, no. That's the thing. Like Matari.
Matari.
Yeah. Our friend Matari, like, he has this hat that says Matari on it. And I just wear it all the time.
Yeah.
And but that's I was cool. Like, what
that's
I want to do.
It's a cool name,
yeah.
Too.
But so he's always like, oh, yeah, it's like Atari with an M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Nah. Easy to remember.
Well, in my case, just to make sure that we are on point,
yes.
Because I'm the, you know, the guy who keeps things in check. Let's take an S off that Pitts.
It's Pitt. It's Pitt. Pitt. Sorry,
P-I-T.
Not Pitts.
No,
Pitt.
Not Pitts.
Not Pitt. No,
no.
I am disgusted by Pitts.
Big difference between an armpit and Brad Pitt.
You know what? I didn't say anything because I enjoyed that.
Like, oh, just fuck it up again, real quick, one more time. Say it wrong.
Yeah,
no. But no, and Mashindo is the artist on the book.
One of the artists. There actually are a few artists. I'm sure Roosevelt will allow.
Yeah, there's about two or three artists on the
cool.
project.
Okay. Very cool.
Larry Stroman is one of them.
Yeah,
I mentioned that to you when we first met.
Yes.
Then there's Keith and Jones. It's one of the artists as well.
Cool.
The Zong Brothers, which is actually interesting duo. They're actually twins.
Mm-hmm.
One does the pencil and ink. The other one does the color.
Nice.
And then, of course, my good friend Mashindo of over 30-plus years. He's the one that really keeps the project in check to make sure that it maintains the integrity of Purge that he actually helped build over the past 20-plus years. So I give him kudos.
I like kudos. Kudos like all
kudos.
Around. Everybody gets a kudo. Everybody gets a kudo.
Well, what's nice about it is to see Roosevelt's reemergence and the effort to actually repackage something that really did well in the early 90s,
mm-hmm.
probably with the repackaging and the resurgence of the power of the internet allowing indies.
Yeah.
To have
we
more,
talk about that a lot.
Yeah, to have more access. And see, I'm constantly talking about gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Because the internet has got the gatekeepers running for the hills because now you have that your own distribution network.
Yeah.
You create your own storefront.
Absolutely.
And you have an international, an instantaneous international access.
Yeah.
That's unprecedented for artists.
Yeah,
that's and awesome. I've been taking full advantage of that. I've been living almost primarily off Facebook for about 8 years.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. I have about 2,000. Now check out how few friends I have. I have about 2,000 friends and live off about 200 of them.
Yeah.
Regularly. I drop some stuff and folks are buying.
That's great.
And Facebook allows me to actually move around the internet quickly, because if I drop some work, it ends up on Instagram. I mean, it ends up going all over the place, in people's personal galleries and otherwise. So the matrix of the social media, actually in and of itself, since my work is of a high enough quality,
right,
it actually moves itself naturally.
Yeah, because people propagate it, because they had to see it over here, and then they put it somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
And that's good, because that's awesome that you have that kind of natural growth.
Uh-huh.
Because that is... honestly, way more ethical, because people try to force it and it just feels weird. And it's also, that's just how it's supposed to work. That's how that's how social media, that's what social media is.
That's how it's supposed to be, right? You know? Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And it's organic, and it seems to be very family organic.
Yeah.
You know, in its own way.
Right.
But it also leaves us vulnerable for overkill on certain things, overexposing what should be personal.
Yeah.
You know, and misquoting or misunderstanding certain things, or the concept of things like friends.
Yeah.
It distorts that extremely.
Yeah, it's one of my buddies, or actually one of our buddies, they run a comic, stand-up comedians podcast, and there was actually a guy on there talking about one of his jokes being like, I have too many real life friends and not enough Facebook friends. And about how much easier it is to be a Facebook friend than a real life friend. And it gets that line gets blurred.
It really does. It really does. When you walk out and you kind of casually say like, it's real that I have a million friends.
Yeah. And people are like, oh, really? That's amazing. Do you remember all their names? No, I don't remember three of them.
So it's maybe it's pressure for us to constantly grow, and that the constant in the universe is change. And I think we get invited a lot through the things we indulge in to not change.
Yeah.
Like how fanboys go crazy because Spider-Man's costume is a little bit different than the comic.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem rational.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I get the point when it's bad, like the... is it not Darkseid? What's the? Is it Dark? Not Darkseid.
Thanos.
Had really, was it Thanos? No, it was actually. Was it Dark? Not Darkseid. Who was that? That was just in the X-Men. The
Apocalypse.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. Apocalypse. That was a horrible costume design to me.
The whole design
of it just did not do, you know, the wonderful imagination from the comic books much justice. You have so much more money behind the ideas.
And he was little. You could CGI or camera trick.
I was going
bigger.
To say you could
Magneto
you do
was
the Green Mile.
Than
yeah,
he was.
You can do the Green Mile type of camera tricking.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Yeah, Lord just Rings. Like just put this guy in a box and put the camera 3 feet below everybody. Mm-hmm. Oh look, Frodo is 0 feet tall.
Right. Which I thought was genius. Actually,
And it's easy to do things like that, and it does feel lazy when people don't. They're like, we could move the camera. No, leave it. He can be taller, I don't care. But he's supposed to be like 6 feet taller, I don't care.
Right.
They're the same height.
Right, sure.
But, yeah.
So, what, you said this comic book originally, you guys did this in the 90s?
Actually, 1993, when it debuted. I don't know how old of you guys are, but I'm in my 50s, so.
Me too.
A lot of people, okay, good.
right.
Okay.
Look good, man.
Yeah. Well,
in your 50?
I look real good.
Yeah,
I look real good.
Look good.
I'm just gonna tell everybody I'm 50.
Oh.
That way nobody can second guess me when I give them bullshit information.
Right.
They're like, he's been around a while. He clearly knows.
Right. I don't know, Roosevelt. Who's older between you and I?
You are. I'm 1 year.
Okay.
He said that with such authority. Just get it right.
It's imperialism.
It's
imperial. It's new imperialism. It's laced with kindness.
No,
liberal imperialism.
We both know the foundation is built on years of love and appreciation.
Oh, right. That's what they call it that too, you know?
Which is code for ridicule.
but the comedy has been around since 93. It was one of the first, or not few of the comics that sort of led the charge when it comes to the Black Age of comics.
Right.
Yes.
There wasn't many out there other than myself, Brother Man, which I'm sure you're familiar with. Machino actually had two or three books.
Actually, four books.
Four books? Okay. Four Electro books. X and is one of them that I remember. Sectonauts.
Sectonauts, Electro X. There were two books of Electro X. Around then
as well,
two books of Sectonauts.
Icon was actually around the time, but it was after. Because
it was actually after.
It was after. Yeah. So it was only a few.
And I think that
us.
Was the momentum, that I think the momentum and the income that started to be generated by the independent artists.
Right.
And of course, it doesn't work in a vacuum. People notice.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think then guys like Dennis Cohen and the group that started Milestone, they're in the heartbeat and they can see it. But they also had the relationship with DC.
Yes.
To broker, yeah. to take that to a whole nother stage.
Absolutely.
You know, on one hand, I think it was good. On the other hand, I think things like that are used to actually capsize one side of the market. Because you actually right. don't want that capital going to the independents.
Yeah.
So if you take that same presence and create it over here in your court, you yeah. have the bigger stadium. Yeah.
Right. Which feeds into the next question I was going to ask is, what was it like to try to put out an indie comic in 1993?
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you, it was difficult.
It was daunting, yeah.
Just thinking about it hurts my brain.
But I think anybody who's interested in doing what we do is going to have to be committed. You know, it was something that I said, look, I'm going to do this
question,
or die.
By the way.
Yeah.
Okay, God strike me down if you don't want me to do this. Oh, well, I'm living another day, so I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I went to business school. Mm-hmm. I tried to understand the concepts of, you know, demand.
Yeah.
Just, you know, economics 101.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, it was basically looking at what are we missing in comics? What are we missing, really?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Whether it's indie or mainstream. And, now, you guys are into comics, so you probably be able to answer this question a lot better than most. But you'd be amazed how I would go out and just speak to random people and say, name me a black superhero.
That's not Black Panther.
That's not Black Panther.
Yeah.
And it's not the first.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. Even now.
No, yeah, it's hard.
Hard.
Even now, if you ask people,
now,
you get, Luke Cage.
Then why is that? Why is that?
Yeah.
Well, typical. It's because marketing. Yeah. No one puts money behind the name.
Yeah,
right.
You know, if you see a Caucasian, oh, Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, rat them off quickly.
Yeah.
So, for me, that was an eye-opener.
Yeah.
Because I said, this is something that I need to do. And that was my passion. That was my mission. And it still is. Even today, Purge is there. And I have no qualms about expressing it. It's there. It's created to help young black boys like myself, who never saw themselves as a hero, to see themselves as a guy who can save the freaking day.
Yeah.
And that's something that's important to me.
And that's a very, that's a very pertinent thing to bring up as well, because, like, the comic book industry was created by, you know, middle-aged white guys. And so every hero, you know, you write what you know.
Sure.
And if you're a middle-aged white guy, you write about being a middle-aged white guy.
Right.
I mean, that's just because that's what you, because you don't know what it's like to be, you know, a Native American girl. You don't know what it's like to be, like, you know, somebody from the Middle East. You don't know.
Sure.
So you write what you know. And that's the thing, is that when you look back at the earlier, like, black superheroes and stuff, because the thing is that, like,
they were clearly written by white people.
They were clearly written by white people, and they were all incredibly stereotypical, like, because, like, for example, when you're talking about early black superheroes and you're talking about Black Panther, they're like, fuck it, he was a prince of his own country. Like, because they don't know anything about, like, they're like, we have to make it the most unbelievably, like, go-to thing we can. We're like, oh, okay, well, he came from another country, so nobody really knows shit about him, and so we can write him however the fuck we want, because he's not a real guy.
Some really unique anomalies came out of that were really powerful, because if you look at the specs of the Black Panther character, he is very high up on the power, intelligence, and otherwise wealth chain.
Oh, yeah, he's a huge force in the comics.
Right, so I think that happened because there was an honesty in the creation. Like that. That was sincerity,
yeah.
Right.
In my opinion,
yeah.
You know that it's like we have an issue, and we're going to try to address it from where we are.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. I'd like to go one step further than Roosevelt. Is the addition is good, but what it gets mired down into in the long term is still the wrong narrative, the wrong narrative about the people that we don't know about. Instead of now bringing in the and to not create a society through the use of entertainment that still harbors the same stereotypical behavior in entertainment that gets then reinforced by what we do in person.
The point is to break the stereotype and to show reality rather than what everyone thinks is reality.
But first, who's defining reality? Because it's all about definition.
Yeah, and perception and biases. Yeah.
So we got to get a broader pond to start defining it before we even address it. Because what's reality for you might be a little bit different for me.
Yeah.
So it's proving to not necessarily be a one-size-fit-all, although heroism is a very, I think, simplistic idea for humanity in general that no one owns.
Yeah.
And that that has to be expressed because we need more than a Michael Jordan to be able to be on a wall in someone's room because that's sports. And there's even some stereotypes born in that about the athleticism of people of color, but not necessarily their ability to lead a football team.
Yeah.
As quarterback, or fly a fighter jet. Mm-hmm. These are real things that still end up stuck in narrative. So now, like we were talking earlier about social media and the spread out of things and the accessibility to your ideas being heard, the playing field actually feels like it's starting to balance itself out, you know, as far as who can say what and the viral nature of if you say it just right. And it doesn't have to be laced with controversy, but the quality and sincerity of what you're saying, I think the internet latches onto those things easily.
Mm-hmm. It's a good platform, and we've talked about this before, where you know, like when you have an idea or mm-hmm. something like that that you want to get across to people,
sure.
But of course, it's a difficult road to hoe because the internet is also full of trolly people and
very
people
much so right
and people who are very like, and a lot of it, like, because every asshole has an opinion on the internet, and really, like, really. And it can be the most unbelievably ignorant thing, and like, you're still forced to see it because it pops up in your newsfeed.
True.
So like, you're kind of fighting a new battle in the respect that like, now you have a platform to share your reality and your vision of things and be like, this is what I believe the world can benefit from. And then you have to then compete with people who are like, nope, fuck you, I don't care, just shut up.
I just had to deal with a guy like that the other day, and I'm trying to share something positive, actually an accomplishment of one of my associates, actually my business partner, and he got on with the interest of derailing the direction of the initial conversation to put it all on him because he's the know-it-all, and he's going to give me every reason as to why we shouldn't be praising this brother because he sees that he's made some tactical mistakes. And that's incredibly, it's disingenuous, but it's not designed to further anything.
No,
it's to derail it.
Yeah, you gotta focus on the positivity.
Sure.
Because it's easy to focus on the negativity.
It's like, really easy.
That's called news.
Yeah.
Like, that's right. That's what happens when you turn the TV on.
And true. If I'm correct, the guy couldn't actually share what he has done better when it comes to building his bank account. I think that was his focus.
Well, that was his post.
That was his focus.
He asked what my business partner's bank holdings were. You know, and
I said, "Fuck, is that relevant?"
Well, what's interesting is like, why don't you, if you have something to teach us, you have to show and prove. I humbly ask you to show and prove, and then we'll address everything else you're saying because we'll have a platform to stand on. If not, just be thankful that somebody did something positive, and were successful at it. Because the whole post I shared was a friend of mine did a Black Heroes Matter shirt.
Nice.
And it went viral at mm-hmm. San Diego Comic Con.
Nice.
That's awesome. Yeah,
and he was actually able to, and it was unexpected because like mm-hmm. Roosevelt, like myself, we are in an experience where we're trying to feel like we matter. It has nothing to do with not making someone else matter. We've been taught that you matter. That's the given part of society, but I am not the given part. So I've always had to make it, to make sure the best of me is always showing.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons that I spent my entire life outside of a structured school system so I could organically make it what my imagination said it should be, not just for visual sake, but for the fiat that I could turn my work into if it was good enough.
I think this the fact that you're saying you stepped outside of the like normal educational bounds of the way of American education system. Your vocabulary is so much bigger than everyone in the school system, and it just it proves a point, which I love because I've been railing about that for years. Sure. This is becoming a political podcast.
But like, it's gonna be hard to keep it from that with me here.
That's fine. That's understandable. Right. Like, hey man, but comics are political.
Get your pencils ready.
Yeah, that's the thing is that like comics are political. Like they are.
It's coming real high. They definitely are.
Well, if they're gonna mirror real life, they have to. To be.
Yeah, I completely agree because they are a social commentary.
Those stories seem more attainable to the viewer. Like we can invest and lose ourselves. Like the first Avengers, and I don't mean to talk about the mainstream stuff, but these are good examples for certain things. And that first movie to me felt like the comic book.
Yeah,
and I think especially the action sequences. Mm-hmm. It's how you imagine the really good artists portrayed that action.
Yeah.
You know, and it was crazy, ridiculous action if you think about it. You know, like with Dragon Ball Z, an entire mountain is felled with two guys fighting.
Yeah.
That's intense. And you wanna see that translated, and CGI allows that very well. It accommodates it. So we're in a place, man, where not only we look at the dreams of our childhood manifesting, or not the dreams, but the imaginings, you know, but we now in a place where we can create our own on the same magnitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
As long as we...
I should know better than that. I'm the worst.
As long as we nourish what I think are high standards with what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because, see, I don't think that things mature or envelopes are pushed if we stay behind mediocrity.
Right.
If we're mediocre. Because I think the sincerity of wanting to be the best, and not the best for bragging rights sake, but so that you can prove the quality quotient of something.
Right, absolutely.
So when I put my work out in the world, when I put my work out in the world, I want it to be not only competitive, but inspirational in a way that's not easily impeached, maybe, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, I think one thing, too, is it's difficult from some creators is to get away from the derivatives.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the strongest temptations when you're bombarded by so much from mainstream, where you really lose yourself and not really embrace your true self and your creativity.
Yeah.
Even for me as a writer, I have to constantly turn things off so I can turn my creativity truly off.
Well, and you learn how to be creative through mimicry at first. So it's easy to get stuck in that step and not realize, like, okay, you've learned how to imitate something. Now start imitating things that are inspirations rather than, like, existing works. You know, take two ideas and marry them together and then iterate on that. And that's kind of that next step past, like, well, you know, he's got a bunch of powers. He's kind of like Superman. Like, well, he's just Superman, you know. Like, what's different? What's the new?
Well, the industry harbors that failure to launch, though. Because it pays so many guys for the mimicry. Because once you get big enough,
because it's safe.
It doesn't become cost effective to use you all the time now.
Yeah.
Because you're so big, your page rate is getting bigger.
Yeah.
So that was the difference between using a guy like Jim Lee and then bringing Travis Shire in behind him, or a guy like Matt Broom, all of the Jim Lee knockoff guys. Yeah. All of these guys actually allowed the companies to now have a popular style without having to pay for it. So I think that harbors some of it. And for me, the creative process is a spiritual journey. Everybody has to take it. But I personally think it's best served coming from you, because your imagination governs a lot of who you are as a being. And if you don't keep it organic, you might easily be led, because you haven't trained your mind to work on its own perspectives or its own bearing or point of view. And it's easy to find yourself, for me, I found it, not letting other people's ideas be the point of departure for my own, that there's a more organic originality that's in my work that actually satisfies its perpetuation. It supports it because it's now unique. It's not derivative. It's something that looks fresh and away from the derivative. And this is what This is what created all the copycats about the Matrix. It was so new. It was so unique and so thoughtful, although it started out wanting to be derivative. Mm-hmm. Because remember, it used all the manga as the foundation of inspiration. But it still did that, and it was still something a little bit fresh about it being totally live action. And you need to keep some of that originality, I think.
I mean, it's very much one of the things that I tend to focus in on when I'm... like, we had that conversation earlier before we started recording about the sketchbook thing. And
I was thinking of that.
Yeah, and like, you know, every time somebody gets the Hellboy sketchbook, they're like, you want me to do it like Mignola? And I'm like, no, because Mignola did it like Mignola.
Right, and he does it the best.
And he invented it, so no,
yeah.
Do your version. Exactly. And that's I think, something very important to remember is that there's always your version of a thing.
How do you find... The line, though, because at a certain point, if you're trying to be so divergent, it becomes kind of heady and loses its audience. And then at the same time, you don't want it to be, you know, identical to something else either. Like, is that just something that you kind of naturally find in your creativity and let your influences just come out on their own without any direct action? Or is it something where you're like, okay, well, I have a thing I'm doing, so I'm intentionally going to draw from this and try to use that influence in this while also having these ideas that are sort of just natural to me?
That's a complex question. I think I'm following you.
You're bringing me down, Chris.
That's a good one. I mean,
for instance, like, you know, if you are an artist that is hired on by Marvel, right, and they're like, okay, well, we want you to draw Spider-Man, but we want you to be unique, but you know what, we kind of want to have a Todd McFarlane thing with this. You know, it's like, okay, well, I have to figure out what the bounds of that are.
Well, I was going to say you have to find a happy medium, because you have to be able to, in the end, I guess, in that example, feel a little bit like Todd and being able to add enough of yourself that you're present. Mm. You know, but for me, my creativity, it's not that I don't use influences and in everything is totally organic, because I think that a thought about a particular word can actually create an entire story for me.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, I can be driving down the street and think of one thing, and it's just a spiritual concept for me, because I'm trying to figure out the self so that I can figure out the mystery of whatever it is. And I find that inner journey has enlightened me to most external things. So I stay in there, but I mean, I can see a cloud formation, and it'll give me an idea, mm-hmm. or a political concept of how politics is so very skilled at thinking 50 years ahead of my life and having me the place that it wants me 50 years from now. To me, that's deep. There are stories in that that can be told that don't require a cape or tights, mm-hmm. that I think that I could still superheroize it. I can leave it in the genre,
right.
But I can take the story matrix and take it in a place that maybe comics might not be comfortable with. Right, like, I'm doing a story from the perspective of the Ifa. It's an African religion, the Ifa religion. That's something that would be considered like voodoo to Marvel. Mm-hmm. And most of their portrayals of that is negative because their own Christian moorings. So by me simply taking it from the organic point of view of the respect for the divination system, then I can actually build a story around it that just that component itself will make it unlike anything else. And that's all I'm saying, is that if you start with the idea of cape and cowl and all of that, your story may
be...
boxed. Right, you're automatically boxed, man. Yeah. Automatically.
As opposed to starting with the idea that you had, the inspiration and the influence, and then saying, okay...
And then applying capes and tights to it.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
You and I have to assume that, like, since this is clearly something that both of you guys are very passionate about and feel strongly about, I have to assume that Purge is very much enwrapped in that idea, where it's about a concept and we have applied the superhero aspects to that concept.
Well, definitely. It's about real life, you know. Yeah. Purge actually gets abducted when he was young and experimented on. The Manhattan Project, the Tuskegee syphilis experiments. Mm-hmm. These are things that actually happen that sometimes we want to just kind of forget about.
Brush them under the rug.
You know, and I'm wanting to say, no, these things happen. We need to talk about them. How can we incorporate it? Mm-hmm. And when you ask about how difficult it is to actually produced a comic back in the 90s. Yeah. I think anything that you're going to do have to be built on a foundation of good relationships, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, people who you can trust. Yeah. And although we give each other a hard time, I can say without a shadow of a doubt, I trust this guy next to me.
That's right.
You know, I leave Purge in his hands, and I have never, never gotten anything back from him that was subpar. And that's hard to find.
Yeah. Even Chris, when I don't trust you like that. I aspire to be as loving towards you as these guys are. But I just hate your fucking guts so much.
Wait. Even when I take Roosevelt's original idea and in front of him ball it up and throw it in the trash and say, brother,
Chris has done that to me.
Right. It's like, I respect you too much to do that to you. So we're going to do something a little different that might last a little longer.
So I guess I do love you as the concept. What this boils down to is I've been enlightened to the fact that you actually are my soulmate. And I just won't admit it because you're so fucking
Roosevelt's been a real good guy about allowing me to go straight intuitive. And for him to tell me the concepts and for me to give it to him, not just from how he perceives it,
right,
but what my professional acumen,
yeah,
and those other things that I actually have a little bit more oversight than he does in those regards. He allows me that space.
Where it becomes a shared vision instead of you just drawing the words.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And it's easier to let the reins go and to basically leave it open, because Chris and I actually have talked about this a lot in the way that we both write, because he's very much more loose with his basically direction on the page than I am. I'm very tight with mine, and that's because he has a little bit easier of a time letting go and letting the artist run with it, whereas like the way that I've always thought about these kinds of things with writing is always just like I know what every panel looks like in my brain. But the thing is that we both do have the same concept behind the ladder of it, which is basically being like, once I give it to the artist, they're going to make it better than I wrote it down. Yeah. And I have to trust them to do that because it's their job. It's what they love. It's what they're good at. It's what they've done their whole life.
Right.
And like, you have to trust them, because if you don't, and you're just like, no, it has to be like this, you're just going to get a shit show project. And you just can't do that. If you're going to work with somebody, you need to pretty much trust them implicitly.
But there's no doubt about it.
You got to have a shared level understanding,
yes,
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In other words, I tell my kids, 5 of them, I need peace of mind to write. You know, we need to be able to nourish one another as well. So if I call them in at 2 o'clock in the morning, which I happen to do every now and then, I understand that may be his time to focus on whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
And even though he may not get back to me when I want him to, he always gets back to me when I need him to.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the clear relationship dynamic that we have over the years, and that's hard to find. But also I think too, as a writer, and this is to all the writers out there, is that when an artist draws something for you from your imagination that you know you're not able to do yourself.
Yeah. They're doing you a favor.
Okay. Okay. That's a shared creation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So when the credits go in, his name or her name should be right beside yours as creator.
No matter how much it looks like what was in your
head. And it doesn't matter if you pay them either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Unless it's a understanding or an agreed upon, but even so still, it's a shared creation. And that's what I mean by a level of understanding. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to kind of navigate the whole creative process a lot easier. And you end up having wonderful characters like Purge and one of Machindo's characters that I'm looking forward to, make sure I pronounce it correctly, Anacolapo. I mean, if you ever...
So many different names!
I can't wait for that to come out.
Well, his name is... it's a Nigerian name. It has connections to the Ifa religion. And it means he has death in his pocket and cannot die.
You know, for such a short word, that's a lot of meaning packed into like 7 letters.
I want a new language. I can't
just say one word per sentence.
Right. And that's what happens with the incredible legacy of the continent of Africa and its people, and I mean an international people, that there are so many stories there that are actually completely absent from the modern mental database. Mm-hmm. That there's so much pseudo-originality. There right. are so many stories. Fresh, untouched influence. So it's my characters, they do not look like your average character because the inspiration is so different. And I try to invite artists to do that because what you'll do is you'll actually expand the playing field instead of making it smaller. Mm-hmm. You know, and the big two, they want you to funnel everything through what they're doing because it will invariably keep them on top.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to control what they do, control what you give them, and you will control what they do.
And that's we actually talk about that a fairly decent bit because between the three of us, Colin, Chris, and myself, Chris and mm-hmm. Colin is our DC guy, and I'm very much the indie guy. Okay. Yeah, and like we all read.
That's a good mix of awareness.
Well. And it's not that like each of us doesn't like the other one. Like they know that I'm not like a massive fan of a lot of Marvel stuff.
Just if we go in a store, that's the section we're going to first.
Like Colin inevitably ends up just sitting his ass in front of Batman for 6 hours, and Chris is just like stealing every Spider-Man comic.
Spider-Man. Okay.
And I'm just over there, and I'm like. Yeah, I guess Mouse Guard's cool today.
That's cool, right?
And so it's I've got every Mouse Guard. It's a very interesting thing because when you're talking about you know the shared creation and mm-hmm. and the shared vision and everything, the picture that you're given with a comic book or with anything like that, it has to match the words, like stylistically. Mm-hmm. And the exact opposite is true. Like if you are basing a story around like an image of, you know, somebody, like say you bring Roosevelt a picture of a character, mm-hmm. and you're like, I don't have a name for him or anything yet. Right. I just like him.
Sure.
Then Roosevelt has to match his words to your picture. And I think if you see that in certain things that they don't really match, like this tone doesn't go with this character doesn't fit with this name. Like it's very telling of who gave a shit and who didn't.
Or it could be, it could speak to skill set.
Yeah.
Because we are in an industry where people do a lot of fluffing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do a lot of fluff because if you don't immerse yourself in mastering your skill, then you got to talk more shit than anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes it's just...
We know dudes like that.
We all do.
Yeah.
We all do. It's like, man, you should... talk less.
Things can also be mismatched for a project, though.
Because like, that too. Yeah, I've been there.
Like Brian O'Malley that does Scott Pilgrim. Like, he's not going to draw Spider-Man.
No.
But at the same time, when he
might draw Spider-Ham.
It's great for what it is. You know?
And that's a good point.
It's not spectacular, but it fits the project that he's working on.
That's an excellent point.
I think it's also kind of indicative of the situation where when you have somebody who's very passionate about, you know, the other half of the project, like an artist that's passionate about the script that they're on, it's usually because when they read that script or they read like whatever treatment they've got, they're like, this is what I can do. Like, this is my art style and I can bring that to life. Whereas if you have somebody who's reading it and they're not connecting with it, then they're inherently not going to see their art style. Even if their art style would technically fit the project, they're never going to see it in their brain fitting it because they're like, I don't want to fucking do this.
Also, Brian Lee O'Malley, please draw Spider-Ham.
Oh, my God.
Spider-Ham. Right.
But one of the cool things that when I met Roosevelt and we talked a little bit about Purge the first day, he is the only North Carolina hometown superhero, and that's dope. I think that's awesome.
Now he was smart with that.
Yeah, and that's a good marketing about that. Like he's from where I grew up, and I'm just like, yay, Wachovia penis building.
Well, it's all about what I don't see. Like I said, I don't see, or people don't know about many black heroes. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking at Marvel. I read Marvel, DC. Is New York the only place that has crime? Now, back in '93, believe it or not. Back in 93, I'm guessing around May, April, when actually Purge was on the front page of the journal, nice. Winston-Salem was in the top five of the highest crime rate in the nation.
Really?
In the nation.
Did not know that.
Okay. Winston-Salem.
That is the weirdest thing I've heard
because,
all
day. Yeah, I didn't Salem. Know that.
So
I can't imagine that.
They did a good job flipping that around.
Yeah. Winston-Salem, like, I'm
thinking, now we're safe.
Right.
Winston-Salem doesn't need a hero. I don't know who does.
Well, at that same point, back then, if I'm not mistaken, I don't remember exactly what year it was that this data sheet came out, but it was also the second most segregated city in the country, right after Salt Lake City.
Didn't know that either.
Yes. And which is very telling. Like when you do that, when you intentionally segregate something, like people are gonna get mad and shit's gonna go wrong.
And stuff's gonna go wrong.
Yeah,
right.
It's funny because I also read an article not too long ago about like the top 10 crime rates cities in North Carolina, and I've realized what it is. These are all based on calls. These are based on what gets called in. It's not based on like what doesn't get reported.
Yeah.
It's all based on what gets called in. And people who call shit in are people in rich-ass neighborhoods who are like, there's a guy walking around outside and I don't know him and you should come arrest him. And that's what you get is when you get a city like Winston with a lot of people who are old money in places like Buena Vista, you get a lot of calls about bullshit that's not really a thing.
You really do. Right. So, but even for real crime statistics, it's very general that I think I'd like to say that communities rob, steal and kill each other all the way across the board, but also across the board poverty looks exactly the same and has exactly the same behavior everywhere in the world.
I agree,
poverty looks and behaves exactly the same. So in all in all, if we just address that and this is the political part, if we just address if we just address the poverty, so many of the issues that we see will disappear.
Well, one of the things will disappear is a lot of division.
Yeah,
because we're all in the same boat.
But that's the part. Yeah,
I mean, you know, that's why
we're all people.
That's why MLK got shot when he was trying to bring the poor people together.
Yeah,
because you know those who don't want to see that happen.
And it wasn't just black people, poor people. Period.
Yeah, the
and
impoverished.
That's frightening for the power base at the top.
Yeah,
right. The internet is tripping them out. It's
why they're trying to put a lock on it.
It's
and all
too
of us are like, no.
Like it's a, I guess. 100 years ago, it would be considered a magical device, a box with all the answers, something that you can ask a question. It's like the, what's that thing?
Magic 8-Ball.
Thank you. The Magic 8-Ball.
Okay. I don't know why I was right there.
You were right there with me. Yeah, man.
Like, you just held
I just did like this.
And I was just like, well, that's clearly a Magic 8-Ball.
Yeah, of course.
And
of
it
course.
Couldn't be anything. Not a cantaloupe. It's not a watermelon. It's clearly a Magic
8-Ball. That is an 8-Ball. Right, right.
Why would you ask a cantaloupe a question?
Look, man, you do what you have to when times are tough.
100 years ago? Internet, cantaloupe, that might have worked. Yeah. Cantaloupe, please. Right? But it's a beautiful thing
like, oh, no, man, go
to actually have education to be accessible like that. I think the one thing that they're not doing correctly with the internet is to make it absolutely free everywhere.
Yeah.
That should be a human service.
It should be a right, just like a library.
Exactly. Because that's the government, then all it has to do is cater the connection. You can actually relinquish the teaching part if that's what you want to do. You want to take care of the populace? Give us the
information.
Thank you. The keys. The capacity. We'll take care of that.
Yeah.
Because people generally don't want to be stupid.
Is it Charlotte one of the few cities in the U.S. that has citywide Wi-Fi?
If I'm not mistaken, it's not the whole city yet, but they are working on making the entire city have a Wi-Fi.
That's nice.
Now that's beautiful.
And that's the thing is that like you have to think about it in terms of, you know, the library was the original way for people to go and get knowledge for free.
Yeah.
You know, like you go in, you pay $2 for a membership card.
That's right. And then it's in.
And then you just have it. And then you can look at all the books, all the movies, all the periodicals that you want. You have encyclopedias everywhere. You have access to their computers, and that's awesome. The internet is that's what the internet is. It's just everywhere thing. so you don't have to like go
you don't
to
have
a
to
place.
Leave
yeah and yeah. You know, but that's lazy and American, but whatever. But I think that is something very important to say,
really,
and
right.
You know, and it all does kind of link back in with what we kind of originally touched on, which is it's a way to get
it's
things
a way
like
to get
Purge and other indie
out.
Comics
yeah.
out there get right. your artistic vision out.
I want to hear more about the Winston-Salem thing, because we kind of rabbit trailed off of that.
Sure.
Well, one thing about the background of Purge is that, again, Winston-Salem needed a hero. That was clear, just based on the data. Okay?
Right, right.
But I want to do something a little bit different. I wanted to upgrade Winston-Salem. Now, this was my thing. We were talking about Black Panther, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a Black Panther fan like most people, but, again, couldn't relate as of yet, and I'm hoping to rectify this, but I've never been to Africa, okay?
Yeah.
So it's not much about Africa that I know other than what I've read. Mm. So what about heroes here?
Yeah.
Okay?
It's very important. Yeah.
You know, what about heroes here in our experiences as a Black American? And again, as Machino and I was mentioning, we were both born in the 60s. Now, I don't know if you realize, but when we were born, Blacks didn't have much freedoms, any freedoms. There was still white and black. Yeah. So I was born at a time where I really didn't have much freedoms at all. So when I look at Purge and Winston-Salem and the history of Winston-Salem, even before it became Winston-Salem, is incorporated. But at the same time, I wanted to upgrade it. I wanted to make it futuristic. Mm-hmm. How would Purge look if Wakanda was in America? How would we handle that?
Oh, that's
that?
A cool idea.
How would we handle that as a people?
Yeah. Mm.
Think about it. Mm. That much power, that much favor, technology, but predominantly controlled by people of color? How would that, be like Tulsa? Yeah. Would someone try to shut it down? How would we deal with that now in this day and age?
That's a good point.
That's what I want to bring, and that's what has grown from Purge originally being created in 93 and what we're doing now with the reemergence.
You got to like challenge the system.
Sure.
Like, because if you don't challenge the system never changes. No, it's beautiful. I like
that. I think that's the one thing missing from a character like Batman is that
there is no challenge to the system.
Yeah, that to me, it's a mixed bag of shells, the character, because he's a part of the wealthy elite. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what Batman does, if you really break it down, protects the wealthy elite while protecting the public.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he as Batman can completely uproot the hierarchy of a police station to get the corruption out of the top side of it. But he doesn't do that. He only deals with petty crime, and that's strange.
No, that's fair. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that people probably like about Captain America is Captain America.
Jim Gordon.
Yeah, no, Jim Gordon is that answer to Batman because Jim Gordon's not rich. He's just Jim. He's just
a regular guy.
Commissioner Gordon. Sure, yeah. Sure. I mean, but I think that's what people like about, you know, Cap, because he's just some broke kid from Brooklyn, you know, and he, you know, gets into the political side of comic books a lot because
his name is
Captain America. Like, you can't just phase him out. Yeah, you can't phase him out of it. And I think that that's a really cool concept because, you know, to make a comic book that speaks politically is very important. And I love that that's what you guys are doing.
Right. I think there's a lot of latitude with Purge because he is an industrialist. He is a Stark like character with his wealth and his capacity to create his own direction. So it's nice to think that there are people who would have access to that kind of wealth that would actually use it, and I mean really use it in real time for the benefit of everyone.
For real change.
Rather than
superficial.
That as an idea, since imagery, 2D imagery through antiquity has always been very influential on the imagination of a human being. So that's why those images are so important. So here we can actually influence younger generations to a different thought form, which is why what we do is so important because it's so powerful. So coming up with characters and this we can go completely away from the racial side of it and just the ideas behind the motivations. Because what's the character's motivation is the thing, you know, that could leave something, maybe a negative thought form on a child to be a bully. I think America behaves like a bully. So the children in it must behave like a bully. Mm-hmm. It's top-down science.
Well, it's back to being really creative in how you design your character. Purge is a name, but that's not only who he is.
Right. That's part of it I like. Yeah. Right.
We're talking about a guy who is struggling with identity in himself, which most black people do.
Right.
Okay.
I was actually going to ask you about the name. Why did we settle on Purge?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So Purge is about purifying, about cleansing our thoughts, mm-hmm. cleansing the way we see ourselves internally, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of junk going on, a lot of dysfunction that we have to deal with internally mm-hmm. before we can project goodness and project positiveness to others.
Yeah.
We have to get ourselves straight first. So Purge is on that journey. But then he wants to actually help purify his city. Granted, he's a highly technological genius, he's rich, but how do you rectify your decisions?
Yeah.
When you're dysfunctional. It has a lot of back and forth within himself and also trying to keep his city in check. So Purge is just not about the name, it's about who he is. And hopefully it'll resonate with all of us mm-hmm. in some way that we have a lot to deal with internally first.
Yeah.
On a spiritual level, physical level, the list goes on.
Sure.
In order to help each other improve. Mm-hmm. Because I can't help you unless I'm really helping myself
right. yeah.
to be the best I can be. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of that woven in, right. including the African mythology
yeah.
Aspect to it also.
So do you kind of like the fact that, you know, that idea of that archetype of somebody who's conflicted and who's kind of battling within themselves? Because it's very reminiscent of how people see Batman. And,
sure,
and
sure,
that's,
sure.
And that's, it, we've kind of discussed this, and we see Batman as like that quintessential everybody knows and most people like character. It's the person that everybody's like, I'm Batman. It's where everybody right. goes. And that's very cool to see that you are drawing a direct correlation with the most popular character in the industry, debatably. and bringing that debatably, yes, but he is shut up, Chris. But like, and basically saying like, you know, this is a better version of that guy. This is a version of that guy that does more than what everybody sees as True. Being the quintessential Batman-esque character. Like, we're making him be a even better person while still being a real guy who's conflicted, who's struggling to be himself. And I've like, that's how I've kind of like, as you guys have talked, I've seen that as my
right,
as
right.
my interpretation. And I think that's cool.
Right, so, right. There's a part of that where I can see it, but I don't know if Batman owns that archetype. And I think it's a part of the hero's journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because a part of the hero's journey is actually over like surmounting your conflict.
Yeah.
Because it's our own idiosyncratic behavior that becomes the stopgap between us and our success. So my father used to say, you have to learn to get out of your own way.
I say that to so many people all the time. Oh my God.
Yeah, because it's true though. But that's the old sort of like colloquial, cultural / you know, the community wisdom.
Yeah.
That your older people set up for you, which is, I mean, I don't know, I always go on and stuff like this, but when you break the family, you break a very important part of human development. When you smash the structure of the family to bits for commerce and income, for corporate gain, what you do is you ensure broken people. So I know broken people are a large part of how corporations manipulate us. They need broken people to convince to buy what you don't need. That's a special breed of relationship, because that's not our relationship with nature. We're not supposed to be consumption only. We're supposed to give. That's why I like being an artist, because I actually create, and I have my entire life, I create more than I consume. I break America's consumerism model literally by how I live my life. And I think it enlightens my thoughts a little bit differently, that I'm not adding to that. Because remember, it's still all one. We seem like separate forces. We seem like separate behaviors. But it all ties right into this funnel that we have to share. So if we just, each one of us, address what we're doing, even when it comes to like creating a purge, it's still within that same mindset of just looking at how you affect the other. And if we all did that in real time with real human sensitivity, again, things would be very different. Our relationships, like Roosevelt said earlier, would be based on something different. And the policing of each other's behaviors wouldn't be so necessary.
Don't have to call everybody out on being a dick all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, either you wouldn't have to call them out, or being a dick would be okay because you would take it personally.
Yeah, no, yeah. Also yeah. true.
So it's like, oh, wow, he's a dick.
It sucks for you, man. I bet right, your life right, right. a little bit sad.
Wow, you're a dick, man. Can I give you a hug?
I buy a ham sandwich.
Right.
Maybe if you had some food in your stomach, you wouldn't be so angry. I don't know. But we actually... I broke.
Well, you're a dick.
And it's quite okay.
And then subtitle, do you need a ham sandwich? Oh my God. It's like, that's the subtitle of the third Lethal Weapon movie.
Right.
One of the big reasons we actually got you guys on today was apparently politics, but also
that's my fault. I'm sorry,
man. No, this is actually good, because
we've been great
conversation. Yeah, I literally have just been having fun this whole time. But you guys have a Kickstarter coming out for Purge,
sure,
and
sure.
I'd love to talk about that right before we wrap it up, way everybody knows what's going on with that and how they can get involved.
First of all, how did we get to the point where
we're back at a Kickstarter now.
Like, yes, actually, yeah. Let's go okay. over the life yeah. of the comic.
Sure, sure.
Okay, well, the life of the comic again. Back again. 93. We did about 3 issues, and of course, you know, things dwindled, and I left it. I left it alone. Got married. Mm-hmm. You know, kids. Five
don't
kids
leave
later.
Out the accomplishments of all of the press, the international press that you got. If you could just kind of truncate that in a few words.
Well, Entertainment Tonight. Newsweek, USA Today.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
E! Entertainment.
He was everywhere.
Black Enterprise, back in their 90s as well. So, you know, we always talk. We do so much. You forget a lot of it.
I'm very important. I don't know if you know. I'm a big deal.
Right.
I just want everybody to realize.
Right.
According to Entertainment Tonight, we sold over 1 million copies.
Wow. As an indie
comic.
Wow.
And we were
in 1993.
1993. Wow. And we were the 16th largest publisher.
Wow. I still is back when comics sucked.
That's why I told him he had to give that, because he sits here in front of us with legacy. That's real legacy.
Yeah, no, this is
so for I
real.
Need that. Yeah,
like I just—it's a different level of weight now, and now I'm uncomfortable. now I feel like can I get you a glass of water?
You give me some wine.
Can I call you a cab? Like, I can get a driver here in a couple minutes.
Well, they have that new Hooters Uber. You can get one of those.
But no, a million copies. Crazy impressive.
A million copies. Yeah. A million copies. And, you know, so again, you know, as time went on, I went on to other things and I decided, you know, I really need to be back with Purge. And I wanted to get started. Now, again, back then, there was no Kickstarter. So what I was able to accomplish was huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember going to the San Diego Con after Entertainment Tonight hit. And back then it was Tyco Toys. I don't know if they're still around.
Tyco
anymore.
Is still around, yeah.
Like a toy company? Yes. Okay. They actually came to my booth wanting to do toys and designs.
Wow.
And the only thing that stopped it from happening is that we had other members of the ANEA Association that didn't want to sign on or couldn't get it together.
Yeah.
So it was a everybody or nothing type of deal. Right. So it never happened. And so as time went on, you know, again, I pretty much went on to other things, marriage, kids, and so forth. As of a couple of years ago, I said, you know what? Windsor Sidham still doesn't have a superhero. He's been dormant. And
due to the long break.
Yeah, exactly. So we need to bring him back. And, you know, I coordinated with Machindo and a few other artists. And here we are, you know, and now we're going to be launching this Kickstarter to produce the printed version. The actual book is completed. So this Kickstarter will help the printing aspect
be accomplished. Is it a three-issue trade volume, or is it just one issue right now?
It's just one issue for now. Now, okay. I do have a graphic novel trade of all the past Purge issues.
Okay, cool. Very
including
cool.
a new story. A lot of wonderful art by this guy, Machindo, in it.
Yeah.
And that's like a graphic novel. That's already done. People can purchase that if they want. Mm-hmm. But the actual Kickstarter is going to be funding the printing of issue one.
Okay. Cool.
This
yeah.
Okay. No, actually, this is the preview book.
This is the preview book.
That went out free online. I partnered up with Kid Comics. Keith Jones is the owner of Kid Comics.
I love that cover.
He approached me and said, "Hey, could you I really like what you're doing. I like to partner up with you."
Boondocks.
So they've been he's been quite instrumental in helping bring back Purge's new look. He has a new costume. Doesn't mean he's going to abandon the old ones, which actually isn't old in my opinion, because a lot of people haven't seen it anyway.
Yeah,
but be that as it may, he's
back about a callback.
Exactly. So he's going to be back and back strong. I'll throw this out there since I have a moment. You know, we're going to have stretch goals. What we're looking to raise for the printing, before I get too far ahead of myself, is $2,500.
Okay.
So really reasonable.
Yeah.
But we have stretch goals that I'm quite excited about.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
Let me go make sure I got it in my head. 3,000, we will print extra books to give to schools, including two in Kenya and Nigeria.
That's awesome.
That's so good.
Machindo's business partner that he was speaking of, whose name is Uraeus,
Black Ops,
has huge contacts in Africa. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be responsible for distributing those books to a lot of needy schools there.
I like that. It's almost going to be like the reverse, like their Black Panther, because it's not in Africa, it's in America.
Exactly. There you go.
Dude, is this what it's like living in America? They got flying cars.
There you go.
Really, really, really.
There you go. There you go.
We got to get there.
Exactly. And then we are looking at 6 grand stretch goal. If we reach that, we'll jump into issue 2. And then 8 grand, we will have a 30-second to a minute, I'm guessing, animated short.
Nice.
And I actually have that already in the works. I have a sample that will be shown on the Kickstarter page.
Awesome. And some other animated
Chris, do we have 8 grand lying around?
So people will be excited. People are going to be really excited. So the Kickstarter is quite reasonable. Stretch goals are on point. So people should definitely support.
We're very excited about it. And when I first met you at the Mount Airy Comic Con, my buddy Devin was with me, and he hasn't really gotten too much into comics before, but he came with us and he had a great time. It was his first convention, and he could not stop talking about meeting you. He said it like he was like, I don't know why, but like I met that guy and the comic was cool, and he was just super nice, and like. And he's told like everybody about
that's
you.
Cool.
Like he's just like, I met this dude at a comic convention who has a Winston-Salem superhero, and it's like awesome. It's like this futuristic Winston-Salem, and it's just it's dope. And the guy is really nice, and it was really fun talking to him. And he was actually he wanted to be here just to say hi to you again. No shit. Like, but he had a show tonight in Wilmington. His band's playing, and he was like, "I'll try to swing by, but I don't know if I can." And I was like, "Dude, if you can, I'm sure he'd be happy."
Well, you know
to say
that that brings up something I wanted to mention. This goes out to one of my biggest fans, Chris Stowe. If you're listening or will be listening, this is for you. His father is 65 years old, and he had the first Purge book. Yo. He drove all the way from Winston to Mount Airy to meet me and have it signed.
Wow.
65 Sick. Years old. He has it framed, hanging in his bedroom.
That's nice.
That's awesome. Sick. That is nice. Dedication. Yeah. That is
that's
a fan. And that's what Purge is all about when it comes down
that's
to it.
That's got to be so humbling.
So 65. Yes, 65.
I mean, like, yo, and, dude, you shouldn't even be driving.
And,
just...
his son, Chris... was like 5 when he got it.
That's so now, crazy. Wow.
So, that. You know, that was touching.
No,
and,
that is that's
and that's what and, I mean. That's what I mean. Legacy.
Yeah.
That's legacy.
That's
and,
beautiful, man.
I'll throw this out too, just in case anybody else is listening. Now, we're going to be having a Kickstarter launch party.
Cool. Okay.
All right, in Mount Airy on the 9th, the day after we launch, at Down Home Restaurant in Mount Airy in Memory in Maine. We're going to be having food giveaways. So if you're listening, you want to come out, it's going to be from 5 to 8. We're going to be having a great time, and we're going to continue to keep this momentum going.
Hopefully everyone who's listening to this is listening the day that we release it, because right. the kickoff party is the next day.
Exactly.
We are recording on Sunday. The Kickstarter goes live on Monday. This recording goes live on Monday, and then go to the party.
Right.
Tomorrow. Or tonight if you're late.
Just cancel your plans. Cool. Your friend probably doesn't like you anyway. Just go to the party. It would call out of work. I'm literally thinking about just calling Hayward and being like, I'm sick.
right.
But no, I'm very excited about the Kickstarter. We will definitely be donating to it because we would love to see this project get off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
We want to thank you guys for donating a couple of your posters to us, which we will be doing as giveaways during some of our contests. Which
excellent.
One of them we're also going to frame and put up on the studio wall.
I'll make sure I get you guys some really nice art for the studio, man.
We're talking about building a shed outside that's going to be basically three or four times the size of this. Yeah. That's a real studio. Yeah.
Oh, really?
We are just going to line it with art from the people who sit
fantastic.
On. Yeah, just whatever you like, whatever anybody can give us.
I'm available for murals as well.
Oh my God, yes.
A mural in there will make it really live.
That sounds amazing. But yeah.
You set these guys up for orgasms.
Well, here's what's interesting. My name is Shindo. It has quite a few meanings. One of them is to stroke creatively. Shindo means to stroke.
That's awesome. Right. But my mind is dirty, so I'm just like, stroke.
But there's that implication too, because I found out probably about 5 years ago that it's Swahili language, and it also means to orgasm. My name means to orgasm.
See, I wasn't too far
off. Hey, my name is, my name is Come Full. How are you?
Right, and that was an after learn.
That is so, kind of dope,
isn't that
though.
Interesting, though?
That's, no. My name does not mean that. Nor anything as cool as that. And now I'm disappointed that my parents are more creative. damn it. Now I'm sad.
Yeah, right, right.
I'm sad now.
My picks.
Yeah, we'll do a round of picks. I guess I can kick it off this week. So I have recently gotten a little bit more into some of the older indie comic stuff that I used to love. And I kind of re-dove into something that's not even an indie comic. It was a political comic written by a guy named Art Spiegelman, who is one of the most famous political comic artists in the world. And it is his adaptation of World War II's Auschwitz camps and stuff called Mouse. I reread it recently, and I just remembered how much I loved it. And it's beautiful, and it's actually sitting on the shelf over there. Yeah, and if anybody hasn't read it, I highly suggest it, because the parallels that are drawn with the imagery between a lot of... Because it's basically, it's about like mice and cats that are respectively the Jewish people,
the Jews
and the Nazis.
Sure.
that no one can see because this is recorded audio. But it's a beautiful book. I don't know if you guys are familiar.
Sure. I know the book well.
Yes,
sure.
It was actually part of one of my curriculums a little while ago in one of my classes for rhetoric.
That's what you want to do, man. You want to create the kind of work that gets used on that level.
Yeah, and like I would love to write something that eventually one day they're like, so this is your study for this week, and I'll just be like, I did that.
right.
But I suggest everyone read it because the imagery in it is so beautiful, and the way that the backgrounds are really what get me, because there's so much in the background that tells more of the story than just the words. And it is a very rhetorically powerful piece. And it's just a good fucking read. It really is. It's a good read, and I love it. I think it's great. I hope everybody can go out and go to their local library or pick up their own copy and check it out, because it's fantastic.
Excellent.
That's my pick.
In stark contrast, I have been playing
Game About Penises.
The ever-living shit out of Pikmin 3.
Man, I am not familiar.
Don't feel bad.
I didn't play the first two. It was a game that was originally on the GameCube, I think. This one's on the Wii U. And you are a crew of astronauts, and your planet has run out of food due to poor planning. And so you go into space to find food, and you stumble upon a planet that has these tiny little creatures that just do your bidding. I don't know. I played a lot of Lemmings when I was a kid.
I see what you mean.
It's got a really similar feel.
Kind
to
of
that.
Lemming
My
feel
second
to it.
Pick is You've Lemmings.
Got, You've got little Pikmin, the little plant people that are just like totally mindless drones, and there's several different colors that do different things, and you have to walk around and solve puzzles. And Taylor's shaking my head because she knows I'm obsessed.
Yeah. I started playing. You just pluck them out of the ground and they just do shit for you. It's kind of cool.
That's kind
of
cool.
It's cool. Yeah, right. It's fun. So if you like Lemmings and like those kinds of like puzzle action, like live action puzzle games, it's a blast. Yeah.
Right.
So picks.
Well, I think I would go to a movie when you guys told me earlier about it, and it's a movie from the 1970s. I guess that is near the blaxploitation era, and it's a beautiful family movie called Five on the Black Hand Side.
I've heard of that actually,
and I watched it again recently, twice. And what I liked about it, and I can't really call the cast of all the wonderful actors and actresses, but it's from the African-American cast. And what it did is it honed in on a moment where self-definition was really important, but not monolithic. So when it's not monolithic, you have to find ways to make room for everybody's point of view so that there's harmony. And some of the external forces, prejudice, racism, and gender and otherwise pressures, were the focal point. And in the end, it was the cultural thing that we had, this culture, this place where we all are from, that allowed us to actually look past a little bit of what was different. And our point of view. Because the father's point of view, he was played off as being very harsh because he was liking capitalism and he seemed a little bit authoritarian. But what he really wanted behind that was just for his community to be in good condition and for folks to do well. And he was a little bit strict about it. And that bounced off everybody differently, sometimes negatively. But with the comedy added and the touching aspects of it, I think it's just an absolutely beautiful movie. And I think it may cause someone to shed a tear or two.
Cool.
Awesome. Five on the Black Hand Side.
Well, for me, I've been on the Sanford and Son kick.
It's Sophie Stork Cousins.
Right.
French and Sanford has been on my tube for the past 3 months, catching up on old episodes, and I used to watch it. But, you know, it was funny, but it was also very political in its own way. Sure. And also, you saw, or at least I did, saw a connection between all of the Norman Lear productions back in that day.
Yeah. Yes. He was cutting edge.
He was cutting edge, but there were so many stereotypical aspects of black culture that but there was a big disservice. Now I'm kind of shifting back and forth. So, Sanford and Son, there was one particular episode that I enjoyed. I don't know if you watched it or not, remember it, but Lamont got a ticket, okay? Mm-hmm. And Fred was saying, you need to fight it. He said, nah, I'm just going to pay it. So finally, him and Skillet and Bubba and Grady. convinced Lamont to go into court. And guess who was his counselor? Fred.
Of course, Fred, right.
So Fred stepped up there and says, you know, first thing he says, which is very indicative to what's going on now, unfortunately, back to the political, he asked the officer, what do you have against black drivers? And the officer said, nothing. He said, really? Look at all these black people in here. There's enough niggas in here to make a Tarzan movie.
And Roosevelt closes out the show with a plume.
Oh, my God.
You know what, you guys? I think this is going to be one hell of an archive right now.
JD and Micah would have shit themselves. our buddies who run the Open Mic podcast. Because, like, oh, my God. They would have loved that. That would have been in their sets tomorrow. Jesus.
Wow.
So when you look at the connection, you know, of the storylines that Norman Lear was part of, definitely cutting edge, but also so many stereotypical things that I look at now and have issues with. And I'm going to switch over really quickly to Good Times, another one of his productions that I'm watching as well. There was a character called Luton Lenny.
Oh, one of my favorite characters. Because he would have a coat that hid all of the stuff that he was selling you, but he also approached you with a rhyme. My name is Lenny. And if I don't have it, there ain't any.
And it only costs one
penny.
Oh, no, I got it.
So, you know, he was one of those characters that was comedic, you know, comedy relief. But unfortunately, we took that now to be something that represents who we are as black people. Mm-hmm. So that's why I had an issue with it. Because he was great. But now when you think of looting.
Yeah,
you think of Lenny in a way. Right.
So you know, so that taught me a lot about how far we have to really go now, in really bringing back or revealing the truth about our culture, whether it be white or black, because there's so much that we are fed by media.
Yeah,
to keep
they tell you who you are. You don't even get to choose who you are.
Exactly. And when I look back at all those shows, now at age 50, I see the division and how far it goes back.
Yeah.
But it's always woven or slightly spread over with frosting of comedy.
Yeah.
This terrible thing that I'm going to make you laugh a little bit at so it doesn't hurt as much.
Okay. Right. Exactly. I'd like to say this. I think that what we should do is look at the world and think of it as better than we think it is. Because there might be a bit of a veil of illusion that allows us to think that it's worse than it is, and thus creating the mental narrative towards what's worse instead of towards what's really happening that's great right now.
Yeah.
And it just depends on how you decide to feed it. So if we do like our parents told us and feed the positive, when I feed the positive, I actually see more of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That is the way it should work and does work.
Like, so I would just like to end on that.
Yeah,
based on what he said.
That could be a whole hour in and of itself.
We're gonna have to get you guys back on. What are you doing in 6 weeks? You're gonna be here. Fun. Amazing. Yeah. What a coincidence.
Thank you. Online, that people can find out more about the comic book and what you guys do.
Actually, yes, kidcomics.com. I think it's kid-comics.com. But also my Facebook page, Roosevelt Pitt, or Purge Past Unspoken Facebook page. You can find out about Purge on his page, and you also can contact me directly from there.
Awesome.
I normally just tell people to Google MSHINDOI KUUMBA, and you will find everything on me.
That
my
is
website
some
is
good SEO.
Machindo Art google.com. I completely own the Google search on my name.
That's awesome.
Completely. And I've actually owned a part of, there's a musician called Anacalapo Fela Kuti, or Fela Anacalapo Kuti, which is where I took the name from. And when you Google him, the character now starts to come up. So I'm going to own a part of that search too. And he is an internationally known and respected personage.
That's impressive.
Afrobeat music.
Yeah, we're not good at this then. We don't know how. We are bad at getting ourselves put up name redacted. It's just a bunch of government files.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Search name redacted. It's just a bunch of documents that have nothing on them.
Well, I have 33 years of this that's supporting that. That's why.
Yeah.
Is that I've just been doing this that long.
Also, no one cares about us, so it's okay.
Well, let me mention this too, because one of my daughters mentioned it to me. It's Purge, not The Purge.
Yes. Yeah.
Just make sure we make that clarification. Yeah.
Because that's a movie.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Pitts. Yes.
You have to go down. Oh, because I was Googling it a little while ago. And unfortunately, do either of y'all know how to edit Wikipedia? Because we need to fix the Wikipedia page for Purge comic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then, I can edit it.
Oh, cool.
Because, for some reason, this is not, there's like Marvel and DC and Dark Horse, but this one.
But that's not on there?
No.
Well, I'm going to have to write a scathing email.
Nice.
Yeah.
You guys are great.
It was definitely first, no doubt.
Yeah. But thank you guys for being here.
Oh, man.
Thank you guys. It's been wonderful.
Really, excuse the left. I had a really great time.
I'm excited to have you guys back in the future as well, because this is. Getting Colin here, I just want to blow his fucking mind.
Oh, yeah. And, great, man.
Everybody, please go and look up the Kickstarter for Purge. Look up the history on Purge. Look up both of our two wonderful guests and see if you guys can get in contact with them about, you know, telling them you like their stuff, seeing if you can buy some stuff that you like off of them, all that cool shit.
Right.
As always, listen, subscribe, rate, share, comment, email, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
We appreciate you guys listening. Thank you for listening. This is Name Redacted Podcast. I'm Alexander Fulmer.
I'm Chris Nielsen.
I'm Roosevelt Pitt.
Shindo Kumba.
And you know what? I'm going to take it out this week.
In Colin Norris's absence.
In Colin Norris's absence, go out and touch some butts.